1. Where faith resides. I hear Fajvović's call in the distance. I'm not paying too much attention. Goldberg is coming up behind me, and the car is about 200 meters to my right. It's possible he wants to resume the journey. The vegetation is very thick, and in order to move forward, you need to backtrack and turn, contort a bit, and look for new openings. In another era, those who opened up these woodlands were called gastadores. I pick up a seed pod I've never seen before. The pod has a pointed end at each tip, like a reptile's tongue. It reminds me of the amphisbaena, a two-headed snake whose single body has the ability to reach opposite destinations, thus connecting the cosmos with the underworld. The connection reminds me of meteorites, extraterrestrial objects that upon impacting the Earth generate a pit, and time ends up burying them. From extraterrestrials to intraterrestrials, they avoid the surface, the critical space where humanity debates the present. The pod, like the snake, is on the boundary between life and death. A while later, we heard that Fajvović was lost in this native forest we call Impenetrable. The three of us set out to the encounter with Mesón de Fierro. We're the last expedition of white men to go out to meet the mythical Iron Mass. The most famous meteorite of Campo del Cielo disappeared in 1783 and became a legend among the thousands of rocks from outer space that impacted between the provinces of Chaco and Santiago del Estero. The first recorded white expedition took place in 1576. Governor Gonzalo de Abreu y Figueroa sent Captain Hernán Mejía de Mirabal, accompanied by a blacksmith, to discover an iron mine. On the way, the captain reports that he comes across a nation of Chiriguano Indians who eat human flesh and kill the natives who serve the Spaniards. The first Western records which can be found on this cosmic history on Earth begin, like many other histories of our planet, with a genocide. Mejía de Mirabal returns from the expedition with hands, heads, and skins peeled off natives. Meanwhile, he claims to have discovered the huge piece of iron. It is precisely the word Otumpa in the Chiriguano language that floats among us as we cross a few meters of monte. It was one of the first known names that the Spaniards heard of the extraterrestrial mass. Otumpa was also the name given to the plain where there was a large pit, itself known as Otumpa. Possibly that pit was a crater left by the impact of the meteor shower. But Otumpa is a verb. It comes from the Chiriguano, Motumpa, which means to worship, divinize, or deify. We're about to head into the monte to follow 4.5 centuries of clues left behind by the story of a lost meteorite, to cross ghost towns and abandoned train stations, trying to understand, after so much searching, how to provoke the encounter with an extraterrestrial rock that is older than the Earth, that spent the last 4,480 million years orbiting between Mars and Jupiter, that in the last 20 million undertook its journey to Earth, that entered the atmosphere around 4,000 years ago and had been lost for a mere 240 years. Where is faith debated today? In science? Religion? Politics? Soccer? In art? The first night we slept at the Mocoví Hotel in Charata. But a few kilometers before arriving, we came across the closing of Agronea, a mega agro-business exhibition in northeastern Argentina, set up in the middle of the countryside. Hundreds of thousands of meters with all kinds of machinery displayed, tents for conferences, inflatables for children, thousands of Hilux Toyotas neatly parked, and pop-up bank branches. I try to imagine how a machine designed specifically for harvesting meteorites would look like. Many of these extraterrestrial rocks were found by hearing a metallic clank between the iron of an agricultural device and that of outer space. Charata is a city that simulates happiness thanks to the spread of transgenic soybeans. That night, at the Mocovi Hotel, I read Memories of the Gran Chaco from 1998, a testimony by Benito Suarez, member of the Wichí community of the Bermejo River, remains engraved in my mind. We used to go to the Monte, which was like God's grocery store. There was a lot of food. There was enough food for everyone. We didn't need any cash. Men would go into the Monte and hunt. Women would go and gather carob, beans, and many other fruits. There was enough for everyone. Then came the Creole, and we learned to eat flour, sugar, and mate. There's never enough money. There's never enough for everyone. Tomorrow we'll enter one of the few remaining patches of native forest, where Fajvović is going to get lost, and I will grab again an amphisbina, which looks like a seed pod. 2. The Matará Cross. We set off to encounter Mesón de Fierro. The first place we approach is Matará, supposedly the last western settlement before crossing the Salado River, at least until the 18th century. This is where Miguel Rubín de Celis, a Spanish frigate lieutenant and scientist, set out in search of an iron vein, with a party of 200 men, at the request of Viceroy Vértiz, 1783. That was the last expedition which sighted the meteorite. Of the old Matará, there are only two adobe houses and a church in front of which, tied to a tree, today hollow and fallen, natives were shot. Or at least that's what a villager assures us. We do less than a kilometer and arrive at the Salado River, an obliged crossing into the Gran Chaco for most expeditions until the 20th century. From there on, finding water became very complicated and there would be no more civilization landmarks. Only the impenetrable forest and the possible appearance of natives. We calmly watch the brown, almost golden, river flow. And we splashed our faces, not knowing if we did it as a blessing, baptism, as material evidence of its existence, or by simply being attracted. We cross and venture into the Monte. Suchan, Cruz, Chinto, Campi, Rumi, Juan Antonio, the Iron, Otumpa, Ramos, Aguadita, Laguna que Cría, Monigotes. These are the names written on a treasure map made by Rubín de Celis in a prison in Spain a few years after his expedition. There are names of pits that mark a specific geographic point and at the same time, spots where it's possible to collect water. It's not unreasonable to think that in a plain flatter than a table, many of these scattered pits in the Monte, a few kilometers away from each other, could be meteorite craters. It would be ideal to follow the pits marked by Rubín de Celis, but the Salado is not a temporary threshold. And on the other side of the river, it's impossible to follow the trail, since almost all of it has been swept away by the clearing of the Monte. Between the long extensions of wired soybean or cotton fields, there are only a few thin curtains of native vegetation on the side of the road set to hide the kilometers of that clearing. There are also small villages, almost deserted, with abandoned train stations, founded for the extraction of wood and tannin, that began once the Gran Chaco was conquered in the first half of the 20th century. The first great extractivist destruction of the native forests took place there, perpetrated by large logging corporations, such as La Forestal, of English origin. The first town appears quickly. It's the new Matara. We stopped there because crossing the Salado cost us a puncture, even though we did it by way of a comfortable bridge and not with 20 wagons and 500 heads of cattle traversing the river. At a tire shop, we met a guy that has a strange cross tattooed on his arm. He tells us it's the Matara cross, carved by indigenous hands in 1594, some 18 years after the genocide of Hernán Mejía de Mirabal. Some say it is the oldest cross made in South America. He gives us directions to a church two blocks away. He says that if the door is closed, it's because there's no one there, and to enter through the side door, which is always open. A few minutes later, we enter through the side door and find ourselves alone in front of a cross that is more than 400 years old and was carved from mistol, a wood native to the area. It is small, about half a meter high and 20 centimeters in its arms. It's overloaded with iconography. I am struck by the fact that next to the Christ's right hand there's a moon, a sun, and larger than both celestial bodies, a wave that starts from a point and expands. Although they say that it would be the star of Bethlehem, I can't help thinking that it could be a meteor shower. Below Christ there is a ladder and another cross, small, twisted, and whose four tips are rounded. Could be bolas, the primitive hunting tool, or even the Southern Cross, although the Catholic interpretation will say that they are the nails of the crucifix. Under this symbol there is a bird, supposedly a rooster related to Saint Peter, but because of its long legs, large eggs showing underneath, and the absence of a crest, it resembles a rhea. It's true that I have an addiction for over-interpreting images, especially if they are Jesuit images of indigenous craftsmanship. I Google and find the Mokovi legend of a Darien warrior named Nemec, who wanted to hunt a large Namik, a rhea, with his bolas. The Namik ends up escaping with a great leap and is transformed into the Southern Cross. 3. Otumpa Diary. We resume our journey, we go from one town to another, from one abandoned train station to the next. Otumpa could have been like El Dorado, but shattered into a thousand pieces. A wealth that instead of being nowhere is found everywhere. I imagine the native peoples of the area marching Spaniards who were after the iron mine, back and forth, for 500 years, one day leading them to one meteorite, another day leading them to another. A centrifugal force as opposed to a singular event. A constant fugue, as if the wealth could be anywhere, but there's no way to exploit and possess it because it has no terrestrial roots. But the Otumpa meteorite, which was also called Fierro del Tucumán, Fierro de Santiago del Estero, Fierro del Chaco, Planchón de Metal, Mina de Fierro, and Mesón de Fierro, really disappeared. It is possible to build a space to encounter that which has disappeared. Perhaps art not only has the power to give form to the intangible, but also the capacity to understand the whereabouts of that which is among us but absent, and to create a bridge to generate an encounter. It's difficult to know why Mesón de Fierro disappeared. Possibly, it might have been the colonial anger. Either the Spaniards buried it and made it disappear by not knowing that it came from outer space and being disappointed for not having been able to find underground the iron roots of the purest iron they had ever seen, or that the native peoples buried it to save it from future expeditions and acts of violence. Ruin de Celis' diary does not mention anything about its disappearance, only that he went to look for a mine and encountered an inexplicable phenomenon. I cannot express how much my admiration was on seeing this, and that the earth on which it rested was of the same nature, perfectly homogeneous to that of all those fields, a soil without the slightest hint of containing ferruginous, salty, or bituminous parts, without savor, nor the remotest appearance of generating iron or other metal. Even when I went deeper in all directions, I did not find the smallest sign that such a piece could have been raised there. My extraordinary admiration came from knowing that there is no production in nature that lacks series. Let us confess, then, that the present problem is a nice one to upset the judgment of whoever tries to solve it. In addition to the texts, two other manifestations of the existence of Maison de Fierro were left behind: a drawing and a certain number of small pieces extracted from the great mass. Several copies of the drawing were made, but the original is also lost. One of those copies is Fajvović and Goldberg's painting from 2011. It was exhibited in several countries, but is presented in Argentina for the first time in this museum exhibition. The painting is the first encounter they produced with the Maison. On a natural scale, 1:1, the meteorite floats. Stripped of matter, lightweight, its image spirit travels, crosses time, and becomes present, although decontextualized. It's a figure with the capacity to receive any backdrop: outer space, the native peoples around the iron, Hernán Mejía observing the meteorite with an indigenous head in his hand, Ruin de Celis digging around it, the extraterrestrial rock vanishing into an intraterrestrial space, the different expeditions that searched for it, the deforestation, the quebracho hardwood, trains passing in the distance, the soybean fields growing above it, its mass as a plug in a lagoon that never dries up. In his diary, Ruin de Celis records the extraction of bits and pieces from the Maison. It caused me an extraordinary admiration to see a piece of pure iron, since it has the first appearance of such, protruding from the earth in such a place. I tried with a small wedge of iron that I carried to test its docility, and although I did not manage to cut any piece, I was very hopeful of achieving it with a tool that came in the wagons. Chisels. In one day, four men managed to extract only 4 pounds. It was not a common iron. It was not possible to melt the pieces, nor to find remains of other metals in its alloy. The few pieces he managed to extract will later be sent to some museums or scientific institutions in Europe. In 2007, Guillermo Nicolás began the search for these pieces at the Royal Society of London, without any results. It was not until 2017 that they found one of the pieces removed in 1783, at the Natural History Museum of Vienna. There, they found NHMV-A18. 19 grams of meteorite from Campo del Cielo that had entered the collection in 1807. Until that time, the only meteorite Europe had a record of was the Maison de Fierro. It was not until 1826 that a second Campo del Cielo meteorite reached the old continent, the Runa Posito, which the new Argentine state presented to its English counterpart, and which has been permanently exhibited for almost 2 centuries under the name of Otumba. A18 is currently the only material remains attributed to the mythical missing meteorite. Since 1783, in almost 230 years of searches commanded by the nation-state, international organizations, and private enterprises, it was never heard of again. But the search and the deforestation began to unearth its thousands of siblings. 4. Beg and believe. We enter the town of Mesón de Fierro with a population of about 400, which adopted the name of the disappeared. We're only attracted by its name, as the historical and scientific records of the dozens of explorers who search for it, both before Ruin de Celis and from 1783 to the present, indicate that the extraterrestrial rock is not to be found in the vicinity of this location. We're also curious about the legend that weighs on a lagoon that never goes dry, where at some point in history a virgin appeared and was made a sanctuary. We're in lands of high temperatures, where rivers and waters are not abundant. In lands that were God's grocery store for the natives, but an impenetrable monte where thirst was the worst enemy of the whites. This is how the accounts of the campaign of exploration, occupation, and domination of the whole Argentinian Chaco in 1884 report it. At dusk, the animals are already reluctant to leave, and some soldiers begin to stagnate. Almost crawling, we arrive at an islet and the night is spent dreaming of the water that we need since the 10th in the afternoon. It is in that direction where we should find the road that goes from the pits of Otumpa to the border of Santiago, according to our calculations. A lagoon that never runs dry inside the monte that the whites call desert is a miracle. The story tells that some soldiers of the Argentine army, about to die of thirst in the middle of the conquest of the Gran Chaco, began to pray to the Virgin. She appears and points out to them the location of a lagoon that never dries up, because the water has a huge stone plug that came from the sky. We arrive at the place and find, indeed, a lagoon with water and some green algae floating. Although we cannot see the bottom, it gives the impression of being shallow. It is about 30 meters by 50 meters. Another pit that could have been the crater of a meteorite. We enter the chapel and it's empty. The inside is simple and austere, with nothing extraordinary to make it stand out. We read. It does not matter that every environment is poor. Luján was poor. Itatí was poor. Virgen del Valle was poor, Lourdes, Los Andes was poor, Fátima, the desert, was poor, and is still poor. San Nicolás, the little country, was and still is poor. The Virgin of the Mesón is the mother of the poor. She's the queen of the poor. The poor are her favorites, because she was poor, like the poor of today, of the 20th century. The Virgin of the Mesón did not look for the populous cities, the cultural centers, industrial districts. She chose a cradle fallen from heaven, a table of stone, of iron, fallen in prehistoric times and which speaks to us of the power of the one who is the author of the Big Bang, of the only one who directs the destinies of the world, of the omnipotent God. Virgin of the Mesón, Virgin of the Lagoon, Virgin Pihuen Noralta, Virgin Otumpa, Virgin of Campo del Cielo, we ask you for a special blessing for all of us. Just as we finish reading the photocopied prayer from a table near the altar, the caretaker appears. Alberto assures us that the Mesón is inside the lagoon, more than 10 meters deep. When the water goes down a little, he tries to put the shovel in, but he says that the floor is as hard as iron. The Mocoit speak of Nanaycaló, a snake that moves underground, source of water and rain, which emerges in the lagoon of the Virgin. Before leaving and upon learning that we work in an art museum, he invites us to check out a storage room where more stories are being kept. It is there that we find 8 paintings by Lili Solinger de Escribanich from 1999. Two of these paintings catch our attention, which are undoubtedly the center of the narration. In one, soldiers of the Argentine army in the middle of the conquest of the Great Chaco make a prayer to the Virgin because they are dying of thirst. She appears to point them to the lagoon. Beg and believe. In the next one, a group of three natives is depicted in the presence of a cosmic event. Above, the planet is being impacted by an asteroid. Below, a lagoon is crowned at its center by a meteorite. That you already have it. The text weaves the two paintings together. I touch the seed pod in my pocket. I think these paintings are like the two-headed serpent, like the amphisbaena, one and the same textual body, one and the same body of faith, which is constructed by opposite extremes. It is the possibility of inhabiting contradiction, to embody the colonial fissure without miscegenation, with two heads at the tips of the same body.